Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick Control Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper, Matt Moore, Skyping. Matt, you had a great game in the Garden last night.
I did. I was feeling it. You know, it was one of those games where everything just kind of came into play. And, I just really was high. My teammates weren't talking to me because it was kind of like the pitcher with a no-hitter. And oh, wait, no, that's Stephen Curry.
No, it's Steph Curry. He's the one that dropped 54.
Studio 54, man.
That was, I was out while the game was going on, and of all people, my dad texts me. He's like, "Are you watching Curry?" And I was like, "Why are you watching Curry?" He's like, "He's got 52. And then he updates me, 54. I'm like, "What?" Like, what am I missing? So went through early this morning and caught all of his shots and highlights from CBSSports.com, funny enough. And then went through and looked at more like the synergy stuff with the game. And that's just fun. I love watching that guy shoot.
It's great because he's able to get that shot up so quick.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And part of it is some guys, their release is quick, but their follow-up to it is not.
Yeah.
Like, you can actually – Kobe Bryant, you can actually tell when he's going to shoot. You just can't time it right.
Right.
And his positioning and his body so perfect on it that you can't do anything about it. But with Curry, it's like he goes from a hip to hand to wrist hanging in the air to goose in like 0.00001 seconds.
Yeah, he's I tweeted it out this morning, but his pull up three in transition is my favorite shot in basketball right now because it's so quick. It reminds me of. In Kill Bill 2, when Michael Madsen opens up the suitcase full of money and is pulling out money, how quickly the snake attacks it. And I know that we're getting to like a whole Black Mamba thing, but really just like the quick strike of a snake. Like his body just, it coils and releases so quickly on that shot. And he's perfectly balanced. And it's just, like you can just, if you've ever shot a three-pointer before or tried to hurry a three-pointer before, looking at the purity and the balance in his shot as he does it with just so little effort. It's just incredible.
It's amazing to watch. There's a couple of things that were really great to watch last night about it. One, I love these games, these high-scoring games. The reason I like them is I love watching defenses get more and more urgent.
Yeah.
Because the Knicks were like, oh, God, run at him. And then he goes by him and he hits this crazy layup in like the third quarter. Because the entire defense is basically running at him. And then on one of the final possessions of the game, you know, Knicks have the lead, and they're going down court. And Curry's got the ball. And I actually liked it because I go nuts when teams, you know, guys got like 54 points and guys, they're still trying to guard him in traditional sets.
Yeah.
When they're like, no, we're going to stick to our principles. I'm like, he has 54. You abandoned all principles.
You let somebody else beat you.
Because Felton and Melo both trapped him at half court.
Yeah.
Like, running full speed, waving their arms like madmen.
Yeah, it was great.
And, you know, he had to give it up, and that was partly why they weren't able to pull it even, because Klay Thompson was rushed because of how frenzied it was and missed two of them.
I love I love you throwing in the shot chart into the post with the video, because it's really just that one, that right wing from three. He was 8 of 9. 8 of 9 from that spot. That's crazy.
Yeah, 8 of 9. 8 of 9 from that right wing.
And, yeah.
Little heads up, Raymond Felton cannot guard Stephen Curry.
No, he cannot.
It was bad too because Felton was like, okay, this time it's the thing I like. It's little moments for me. It's like Felton going down and pulling up his shorts and being like, okay, this time I'm gonna stop him.
Felton had a good close
on the players' faces. Also, like the Knicks bench when Curry would shoot and everyone was like, oh god,
yeah. It's just the immediate like. Hanging of the head. I mean, Felton finished the game.
Yeah, and actually, he missed one, and Felton actually defended it well. And I was like, hey, look at that! Felton's got this!
If you're going to defend one, it might as well be at the end.
This is a time for us to revisit. Last night was such a joyous night of basketball. It really was. It was a fantastic night around the league. It was... I needed it because it had been kind of a slugfest through January and February. And last night was a real joy to watch almost all the games. Even the bad ones were really fun.
Yeah.
But I did want to notice, you know, I don't blame Knicks fans because they got the win and they don't want to be embarrassed about a win. But people going at me on Twitter and saying, oh yeah, but he lost. I don't care. No one's going to remember the Knicks winning that game.
Exactly.
No one. They're going to remember the Knicks winning that game only in the context of, oh, I remember when Steph Curry dropped 54 points. The Knicks still won that game. That's the amazing part. But man, Steph Curry was awesome.
Remember the game where LeBron, didn't he get like 52, 10, and 9 or something like that?
Yeah.
Do you remember who won that game?
No.
Me neither.
Nope.
And, like regular season stuff like that, you remember the performances more than the games most times. Like people ask me, what's the game of the year so far? I'm like, I have no idea. I can tell you the performances I like the best.
Now, I think that there are times when there are games that matter. I think there are games that kind of they're not like definitive. They don't sell everything, but they are to me. I think there are statement games. I think Miami's performance against Oklahoma City before the All-Star break was a statement game. Indiana's performance against New York last week was a definite. You need to understand who runs this conference outside of Miami.
Right.
There are games like that that happen. I think that the Spurs beating down the Clippers like a week ago, that was a pretty, like, you got us early in the season. This is going to be – you do not have the upper hand.
And it's another thing. Like, you can be a Knicks fan, appreciate that Curry torched your team, and be happy that you still won.
Yeah, everyone wins here.
Yeah, everyone wins. That's a very enjoyable – like, you want to see the stars. And not that Steph Curry is necessarily a star, although he should be. You want to see guys like that step into the garden and have it mean something still. You know?
I want to clarify. Right when the game tipped, I said, you know, Steph Curry for this season with the way he's playing, he really needs to add the monster MSG game to his resume.
Yeah.
And everyone later was like, you called it! And I was like, I didn't call it. Calling it would say Steph Curry's going to have his monster MSG game tonight. Right. I just said that it needed to happen because that's like part of any player, like any star player's really great season is just demolishing the Knicks in MSG. Like it's just like part of it. Everybody's, like all the stars going to have that game.
Can we talk about his feet?
Let's talk about his feet.
I love his feet. When I wrote this...
We're in an awkward place right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, no, this is going to get really weird. I wrote this during All-Star Weekend. It's kind of like a preview for the three-point contest. I got to talk to him, and I talked to Novak during media availability that weekend, and we talked about, like, shooting. What I love is everyone's like, oh, this guy's release point. Oh, this guy's shooting motion. Oh, like, you know, his follow through. Like, everyone talks about hands when talking about shooters. It's one of the, you look at Ray Allen's form. His form is pure. You know, I talked about John Jenkins yesterday. I talked about his shooting stroke. But I like that both of those guys, two of the best shooters in the world, you ask them about shooting, and they immediately said, well, it's about your feet. It's about balance. Like, that's where it starts. Because it's true. And you look at him, especially on those pull-up threes in transition, but you look at him anywhere on the court, I immediately scan his feet right away because his footwork is perfect to get ready for a shot. And that's where that quickness comes, is that his feet are always set or always getting set as he's going to his motion. And that's what allows him to be so quick about it. And it's just such an underrated, underappreciated aspect of shooting, but it means the most is having your feet set before you can do anything else. And I love that was the first thing he talked about.
I talk a lot about how, you know, we mentioned this podcast yesterday about gunners and how it's converting tough shots.
Right.
Because I always say that superstars are defined offensively by their ability to convert low percentage situations into high percentage opportunities. And one thing I noticed with guards like Curry, and I noticed this last night, going behind a screen and shooting behind the screener, where you've got your own guy right there, and you got to position yourself just right, being able to rise and fire in that position is extremely difficult and a shot that most guys can't even pull off because they can't coordinate the timing.
Right.
And if they do, they can't even begin to hit it. Curry is deadly at it. And when you're able to do that, there is nothing you can do because it's not about going under or over the screen.
No.
Because by the time that you're in that position, it's too late.
Right.
That's a really impressive skill for me in terms of his ability to understand how to create shots like that. And when he's able to do that, I mean, there's just nothing you can do. There's just nothing in the world you can do. You know, they're going over the screen, and the guy's halfway there. Like, he's about to get his hand in the face, and the release is already through.
And he's one of those...
Curry's already backpedaling, making motions.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that just... He literally just needs an inch. He knows if he has an inch to get that... Like, if you're going to be an inch short on challenging a shot, he's totally comfortable. Which is just cool. Like, that's one thing you don't... necessarily notice unless you watch the game up close, like in person, is how close these shots are contested all the time. And I mean, it's a matter of like just barely getting over fingertips, but guys like Curry are so comfortable knowing that shot's going to get over the guy's fingertips. If he's not going to touch it, there's nothing that they can do, you know? And it's cool seeing that calmness. And a play that Zach Lowe tweeted me about that he loves from Curry is that kind of like secondary transition double drag screen.
The double drag screen. Yeah. Oh, man,
that is a sexual play.
You want? I got a GIF I pulled this year of him doing a floater off of that, yeah. Just because it was so pretty. I was just like, I want to rewatch this 100 times.
Yeah, you. I mean, light some candles, put on some satin pajamas, throw on a little Coltrane or something, a little Barry White, and just relax into that shot. Just watch it. Just love
it. Maybe some Marvin Gaye. I'm feeling some Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, maybe some Marvin Gaye.
Yeah.
Something smooth.
Something smooth. It was awesome. You know who saved them, the Knicks, last night?
Who?
J.R. Smith.
Amazingly.
Hitting the exact kind of shots that I always complain about.
Yeah.
It's a shame that you were out last night because it was Year of the Gunner. Deion Waiters was hitting some contested MF shots.
I've been trying to tell you about the Year of the Gunner. People thought I was crazy.
It was, man. There was and you know who have it all?
Oh, Monte Ellis have it all. I saw the game winner. That game winner was the most Monte Ellis shot he could have taken.
Well, here's what was amazing is it was one of those games and the Houston play-by-play guy, who, by the way, I want to make this very clear. I had some comments about their commentating crew last night. Overall, I like the Houston crew very much.
Yeah.
They are they homers? Yeah, but they're not in the upper tier. It's only the upper tier of homers that I get annoyed with. They are actually very good, and they're able to compliment guys. And he said, he was like, I don't know who player of the month's going to be for February, but Monte Ellis needs to be on there, which is amazing because he was 9 of 24 last night.
Yeah, well, I do like that about it. They can get a little caught up in the game, and a little caught up in things the Rockets are doing and get excited. But for the most part, I do find them to be pretty measured.
Yeah, and Monte's is 27 points on 24 shots, which is not good.
No.
But I will say that Monte actually was playing pretty well in the flow of the offense last night. He was making pretty good decisions. He only had two or three where I was like, ugh. And Larry Sanders followed up with one of those with one of the best plays I've seen of the season. Sanders, if you missed it, I've got a recap on CBSSports.com. Because basically, like, while everyone was enraptured in Steph Curry, I was freaking out over this Houston-Milwaukee game.
Yeah.
As I am prone to do. I mean, I was freaking out. Because this game, if you've got NBA League Pass on one of your devices, if you've got broadband or on one of your devices for mobile, go back and watch this game. If you have an opportunity to rewatch this game, you need to, because Curry's game was amazing and awesome, and it was a really fun game, and I rewatched it later, and it was a lot of fun. But really, Milwaukee-Houston was one of those real joys of the NBA season where everything came together perfectly. It was a fast athletic team versus a fast athletic team, and it wasn't. There was actually pretty good defense play, because 110-107 is actually not crazy point totals for these teams.
No, not at all.
There was some pretty good defense being played. It was tough. They were having to hit tough shots, and they were just going at it. And it featured three of the last minute 10 of that game, I will put up against any of them this season, because it was Larry Sanders chased down James Harden in open court for a swat that sent the ball back to the three-point line.
Yeah.
Off the backboard.
Yeah.
The ball goes down. Ellis misses a jump shot, and Sanders has run all the way back, recovered, and tips it back in. Harden then, on the next position, the Rockets announcers are like, well, James is obviously hurting. His knee's bothering him. He wasn't able to get up the floor there. Somebody else is going to have to step up. Harden then hits this layup. Have you seen the play I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay, you're better at this stuff than I am, because I could never begin to do that. Can you do something like that? Because I can't do that.
That was one of the things that I learned very late, but how to use English off the glass. It's hard enough to do on your own, but against an incredibly athletic and, you know, the best shot blocker in basketball, to get that shot off is incredible. I mean, the amount of control you have, there's no forgiving room for error there. Like, you either hit the right spot on the backboard with that spin or the shot's going to miss completely and be way off. And the fact that Harden can keep that spin on it so well, you see guys like Tony Parker's fantastic at that, Kyrie Irving's fantastic at that. there's some guys that just know how to use English on the ball so well. That's just a crazy shot.
For those that missed it, I'll describe it here, but you need to go see it to believe it. Harden drives around a screen and goes diagonal perpendicular to the baseline, moving left to right. And right as he gets in front of the rim, he goes left-handed, underhand up off the backboard, and it doesn't go like side. It's not like a diagonal shot. He goes straight up, but he puts the English on it, so it bounces. It goes straight up in the air, bounces off the backboard, and then curves straight down through the basket.
And not only that, but he like shoots it where Larry said. Like most guys would go with their offhand there,
yeah.
But he like kind of powers through Larry Sanders, who's on his shooting hand, and the fact that he gets that shot off with Sanders there is really incredible.
It really is, and it was just an amazing shot. And so then, you know, the Rockets have tied it. The Bucks get an offensive rebound, a massive offensive rebound off of a miss. Jennings doesn't realize it's so late in the shot clock and tosses it to Monte Ellis, who throws up a turnaround one-arm heave from like 30 feet, catches rim, and goes in. Just
that Brandon Jennings pass decision too was just like he doesn't throw the pass until there was like one, or doesn't start to throw the pass until there's like 1.9 seconds left on the clock.
Yep.
Like it was very late. I didn't think they were going to get it off, and Monte just casually, you know, backyard as a child for the win is that's one of those ones where you're like. Like, oh, there was a clock malfunction. Or, oh, he got fouled. He's going to shoot it again. Like, that's one of those shots where you keep tossing it up, pretending you're winning a game, but he actually won a game.
We got the GIF up in the video. Check it out. That game was a real joy and a tough loss for the Rockets, who were battling to stay in the playoff hunt. But it was one of my favorite games of the year. By the way, I don't know how to pronounce his first name. Donatus? But Moti Hunis last night, Donuts, as I've taken to calling him, started at power forward.
Yeah.
He's gone from D-League assignment to starting, which, again, we've talked about how the Rockets use them really effectively, but it to me, I'm totally sold on this Thomas Robinson thing now because I'm like, oh, they're making room for Donuts. This is great. And in 25 minutes, he had 13 points on 9 shots and 7 rebounds with 5 assists.
Yeah.
That guy can pass out of the block.
Oh, he can sling the ball around.
I mean, I am really excited about this game.
Yeah.
What the? Sorry, I'm looking at the box score, and it's got Patrick Patterson on the box score last night for Houston.
That seems unlikely.
That doesn't seem right. So, yeah, I was trying to think of what else was great last night. No one's going to have noticed this game or cared. Sacramento beat Orlando by 24 points, and I will say this. Orlando, you have hit the place where you need to be, and I know that it's annoying because you're used to being in contention and you thought this team was actually going to be pretty okay, and they're not. Davis was out. Jameer Nelson is out. Hedo's out.
Yeah.
I guess if you want to count that as helping. Redick's gone. This is what you want, though, because – Tobias Harris had 23 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists last night.
Man, I have been trying to tell you about Tobias Harris. Yep. This kid can play. That was a steal. That was a steal in that trade.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the more I like it, the more I hear about it. And yeah, like Sacramento put up 125 on a back-to-back, and
yeah.
Orlando's not good right now. But this is what you want. You want to build these young guys and get all these guys developing. Develop Vucevic, develop Tobias Harris.
Exactly.
Get that core, add a good draft pick, and then you're going to be on your way.
Yeah.
So that was I actually really liked watching Orlando, even though they were getting killed.
And
Tyreek
looked good.
Yeah.
Tyreek looked really good. He didn't play that. He played 26 minutes, but had 17 and 7, had 4 steals, 1 turnover, shot really well. Like he played a very, very good game.
That's 2 games back to back where he's played well. And I was really impressed with Sacramento, honestly, because even against Orlando, that's a letdown game coming off that Heat loss.
Yeah.
So for Sacramento's playing pretty well.
Well, right and now. Them on the road, that's not a. I mean, even against the Orlando, like that's not a guarantee. Like that's an even game.
Right.
That they just blew him out.
Detroit, Washington. Another one that no one's going to talk about. Really fun game.
Yeah. Brandon Knight had himself a game.
Greg Monroe had himself a game. I love watching Greg Monroe when he's engaged.
Jose Calderon, 18 assists, 2 turnovers.
Yeah, Knight, 32 points on 18 shots,
yeah.
4 assists, 4 turnovers, but still. You know, like, and I love it because, you know, Lawrence Frank's playing the guys he needs to play. He's playing Brandon Knight. He played Calderon, 36 minutes. He played Monroe, 39 minutes. He played, you know, Singler, 27. You know,
Drebko Stucky's got
only
12.
Playing 20. Bynum's only playing 13. That's how it needs to be.
Kim English got 12.
And that's really important. They need to develop English because he's got some potential.
Yeah, I got
Trevor Ariza was like nailing threes like nothing last night.
He must have heard the podcast where we talked about him.
4-7 from three. It was crazy. And of course, the seventh one was a little bit sad. If you missed it, we got video up on CBS.
That killed me.
And I'll say this though. This happens to me a lot where I'll be like, oh, wow, what a great shot. And then they're like, oh, it's an air ball. Oh. Well, the Wizards announcers, from their angle, thought it was a make.
Yeah.
And the Wizards announcer did what he does, harkening back to the Gilbert days, which was dagger!
For us.
The Wizards remarkably, and I don't understand it, because he should have been looking at the players, because the players were like Trevor Ariza was like doing the Charlie Brown walk. The doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. Like, and the Pistons players are like, oh, thank God. And he was like, wait, why are you guys not happy?
I missed this game. Maybe you can explain it to me. Why did San Antonio only score 1 point in overtime?
Phoenix really buckled down, honestly.
That's not an acceptable answer. I need a real answer.
I know, I'm serious. Like, they really, Jermaine O'Neal was like, man on fire. I don't really get it, but he was.
He was really good against the Timberwolves the other night. Like, he's been good lately.
Yeah. Which somebody said, like, Jermaine O'Neal is proof that Greg Oden needs to go nowhere but Phoenix.
Yeah.
There was no reason for him to go anywhere else. It was a really weird game. I think it was just mostly like, it was a game where honestly, San Antonio just didn't have it.
Did they make a free throw and then just leave?
I'm trying to remember actually. Like, I know I watched it, but I can't really remember what happened. I'll have to go back and see what happened in that one. Because I remember somebody, one of the shots in overtime for Phoenix, but I can't remember anything else. It was ugly, though. It was not Phoenix is, like, involved in all these games that you're just like, oh, God, basketball is sad.
And I think we may need to call in, like, some kind of superhero or something because to defend the Earth, because Al Horford has become a monster.
Oh, my God.
He had 34 and 15, 5 blocks, 3 assists. To do what he did against that Jazz front court is ridiculous.
Yeah, that ain't no Tyson Chandler going up against Carl Landry.
Right. Like, you're going against Al Jefferson, Derek Favors. Like, you're going against some players. Now, they didn't have Millsap, but still, like, that's a lot of beef to go up against.
And it was one where they tried so many different tactics, and Horford was just like, oh, you're gonna give me space to shoot, you're done.
Yeah.
Oh, you're gonna try and body me. Post, like, yeah.
And something he is so good at that I wish they would go to him more in the post, because much like Al Jefferson, he's one of those guys who you can tell just he feels the pressure of the defender, like, pushing back, and he knows how to use that. You know, if they're pressuring him on the right side, he goes left. Left, he goes right. Like, if they're in the middle, he kind of steps back. Like, he's so good at feeling where the resistance is and going the other way.
You want to know who's actually a lot of Horford's 34. Jeff Teague with 7 assists.
Yeah.
Teague was slicing and dicing. I'll tell you what I was impressed with last night. Yeah, I have very low opinion of Utah right now, but 0-3 since trade deadline, by the way. I slipped it in there.
That means nothing.
So I'm going to pretend like it does. I was impressed with Atlanta last night because Utah made a run and cut it to, I think, 5. Mm-hmm. And Atlanta was just like, nope. We got this. Like, they just calmly and proficiently did their job.
And let me be the first one on this podcast to say, Josh Smith, phenomenal game.
Yep.
Phenomenal game. Played really well.
24 points, 14 rebounds, 7 assists, no turnovers.
Yeah. Played really well.
Yeah. He was also the beneficiary. Teague was getting past whoever they put in front of him and then doing the drop-off pass. And the Utah defenders just never – they never – figured it out. They're like, oh no, he's passing again. It's like, well, yeah. Like, you think he's going to take a runner from like 5 feet? Like, what are you, a baseline runner from 5 feet? What are you doing? No, he's dumping it off. So Dallas had themselves a little bit of an issue in the third quarter last night.
Sure did. I'm no basketball expert, but I know that you need more than 5 points in a quarter.
They scored 43 points in the first and third quarters. That's the amazing part. 38 points in the first. And, you know, Memphis really was just out of it. They were just like, well, whatever. The problem with Memphis is they came out engaged really in the midway through the second quarter. They kind of started to get it. They were like, no. This isn't bad enough. We can get back in here. And they held them scoreless. And then in the third quarter, they really – and it was – this happens in basketball, and I've seen this, where it got into Dallas's head a little bit.
Yeah.
Dallas was like, we just can't – you know, it, like you start – you're in your head about, okay, don't screw up, and then you screw up again.
Here's what I think the problem was. Nearly 8 minutes into the quarter, they hadn't scored.
That tends to be a problem.
Usually, I mean, again, not an expert, but 20-0 runs to start a half. 20-0 runs at any point, not a good idea.
Yeah, not that. That it's hard to win when that happens.
Yeah,
it's funny because they played them to a draw in the fourth quarter too.
Yeah.
Like, won the first quarter decisively, lost the second quarter by a little bit, and then just were annihilated in that third quarter. It was pretty impressive for Memphis, though, and like, the crowd really got into it. And it was one of those where the crowd smells blood defensively. And you like to see that. It was kind of the opposite of the Curry game, where, like, MSU was kind of like – you could tell that part of MSU was kind of like, are we going to see something amazing here?
Yeah.
There's a little bit where you're like, oh, no, stop Curry. Go.
That was the feeling weeks ago when New York was in – was in Minneapolis, and Carmelo shredded the Wolves in the fourth quarter, and there was a point where I was just like, he's killing my team, this is fun to watch. Like, he's really just playing awesome basketball.
I didn't catch this, but I just wanted to comment on it. New Orleans was without Eric Gordon and Anthony Davis, so I don't put much stock in the win. I do want to say, however, that Kevin Durant had a triple-double in 26 minutes and 51 seconds.
Yep.
So,
and only one turnover.
And 18 points on 8 shots. So he's pretty good.
That's not a bad line.
He's pretty good at the basketballs.
Yeah.
Denver-Portland was a lot of fun, too. Late game, nice cap for the night. Came down to the wire. Denver got a big win, actually, there, even though they kind of let up and let the Blazers hang, like, get back into that game. And that, I think, was kind of like an indication game. It kind of gives you stock of where the season is, where it's like, oh, Portland's a lot better than you'd think because they were able to hang with what's probably going to wind up being the fourth or fifth seed in the West.
Right.
But they're also not a playoff team because they weren't able to close. I made this comment last night. I want to ask you, if you put Cleveland's bench right now on Portland,
yeah,
and you switched them, is Portland a playoff team? I think they are.
Oh, absolutely. You put any decent bench on Portland. Like, that – it's kind of amazing how little they have in terms of just one more player to put out there who's decent. And that, and their starters, even Hixon, their starters have been so good for them this year, only to receive absolutely no support off the bench.
Yeah.
I think that's a definite playoff team with the way their starters have played. If there's just even two decent players off the bench.
I wanted to say this, though. On the final possession, it was pretty amazing. So, at the beginning of the year, George Karl says, well, you know, I think Wilson Chandler, once he gets back, he can play some 4 and some 5 for us. And, like, my eyeballs bulged out of my head.
Yeah.
It was like a Roger Rabbit. I was like, what? And he said it again later, and I was like, you're not serious. You're not gonna play Wilson Chandler, who's like a shooting guard or small forward at the 4 or 5. No, he does. And last night, with the game on the line, I guess LaMarcus Aldridge, who in fact did have 22 points on 24 shots, he put Wilson Chandler against LaMarcus Aldridge in the post on a game-winning possession for Portland. And Aldridge misses the turnaround.
Jesus.
And so, like, I know George Karl is like, see?
See, it worked.
Yep.
I mean, technically it worked.
I kind of wish I'd been there just to bat, because I would have asked him, like, so, do you think that Wilson's defense there was, you know, even though, like, Wilson, like, didn't do anything, Wilson just, like, he got pushed off on and complained to the official as soon as he turned, like, before, like, while the shot's in the air, Wilson's like, he pushed off, like, assuming it went in, and it misses, and Denver wins. That's a big win for Denver, though, because I said in power rankings, they have been inconsistent on the road, and that's a big win for them.
Now, I need to ask you about this.
Yeah.
I know I can be a little curmudgeonly at times.
Yeah.
I can be quite cynical. These are things I know about myself. People seem to freak out over the Myers-Leonard dunk. And I know Andre Miller chose to jump, and he actually got pretty high. and made a decent challenge. And Myers Leonard dunked all over him. But a center dunking on a point guard can be hard for me to, like, freak out about.
I said last night, I made the joke last night, I was like, I said, Myers Leonard is freaking out over dunking on a 45-year-old 6'1 dude.
Right? He has a foot on him.
Like, and then, like, I did the video post, and I actually, like, posted on it. Like, all of it was about how, like, Myers Leonard doesn't respect his elders. Like,
yeah.
It's not just that you're not, like, it's one thing if he got, like, D. Rose when he got healthy and got back.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if he got even, like, Ty Lawson.
Eric Bledsoe. Somebody athletic. Yeah. Somebody who doesn't shoot a set shot.
Right. You dunked on, like, one of the oldest, a 36-year-old point guard.
Who was never that athletic.
Who doesn't jump at all. He never jumps.
Now, I can understand him, like, that, like, I can understand him, like, just being in the moment or whatever, but, like, I was more disappointed with, like, just, like, I saw this huge reaction on Twitter of, like, oh my god, that was an incredible dunk, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't see it at the time, so I went and saw the video once you posted it. I was like, huh. Yeah, that's something. I did find, like, I thought it was hilarious. And I think I wrote this about him in the, after Summer League or something, where I said I could see him being another Blake Griffin in the sense that he's going to make athletic plays here and there and really, like, preen to the camera and to the crowd, and people are going to hate him for it. And that was really, like, the first big play he's made this year. And he dunked on someone, and he, like, did this really, like, really hilarious, like, it was almost like a kid trying to look tough stare, like this stare down until he got back to, like, the opposite three-point line, which I found that hilarious. Like, that was exactly what I was hoping to get from him. That kind of reaction. Like, I loved his reaction from it. I just didn't like Twitter's reaction.
I'm incredibly excited about Portland versus Indiana or wherever Tyler Hansbrough ends up over the next couple of years.
Oh, God.
Because Hansbrough did this exact same thing his rookie year and then realized that no one was intimidated until he actually started doing things.
Yeah.
So now Hansbrough has turned into one of the dirtiest players in the league just so people will realize you can't F with me.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to see it because, like, yeah, he does this, and it was really funny because, like, Leonard screams in Miller's face and screams going back down the court, and you can see, and, like, then, like, there's a timeout after that, and Denver, like, their players are just like, Jesus, come on, man.
Yeah.
like, act like you've been there, son.
That's where I would have loved, like, Iggy to dunk on Myers Leonard, like, a couple plays later and just really, like get a tee, like, really go at, like, get into the whole thing. Like, that would have been a cool reaction.
Yeah, it was, it would have been nice. I think it's also one where my favorite post-dunk reaction actually is LeBron and Iguodala do the same thing, which is the land and put your hands behind your back and then just stare at the crowd for a second and then turn around and go.
Yeah.
Like, the land and just, like, when LeBron looks at, does that and he dunks and just looks around, like, you, like, I am Lord of all that I see. And everyone is like, whoa.
Yeah.
It's one of the coolest moments. For
I miss, him. I miss
the, I like the screaming, but
yeah, I miss the days where you could taunt, like the two, my two favorites of all time. Well, no, my three favorites of all time were, obviously my favorite is when Ricky Davis dunked on Steve Nash and then yelled, oh, expletive into the camera. Like, he yells it to the crowd and then yells to the camera so all the kids at home can see and goes like, oh, excrement. Yeah. Like, it was, that's my favorite dunk reaction of all time. And then the other two are Scottie Pippen's dunk on Patrick Ewing, where he like basically stands over him and is essentially, you know, wagging his junk at him. And then the other one is Michael Jordan dunking on Dikembe Mutombo and wagging the finger. Like, those are, like, I miss the kind of where you could taunt a little bit. Like,
that's why I like Blake. Everyone hates the Clippers for this stuff, but when Blake did what he did to Powell, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. and the coolest one is, actually, probably the best reaction of all time from a dunk was after Blake got Mozgov, and then at the next trip down or a couple trips down later, Amari's shooting free throws, and he, like, just looks at Blake and, like, gives him a nod of, like, that was incredible. Like, that's a cool moment.
Yeah. And that's one of the main reasons I like Amari.
Yeah.
Amari pretty well.
Amari was essentially, like, welcome to the club.
It's nice that, and man, I've noticed there's been a couple plays where Amari's actually gotten past his defender and gotten to the dunk for stat-like jams.
He looks really good this year. I mean, the last couple weeks, I feel like he looks really good. The rust seems to be off. He's playing within himself. He had a dunk on, I think, Greg Steensma when he was in Minnesota a couple weeks ago. Like that, and I mean, you see flashes of the old Stat.
Okay, so tonight we have an absolutely horrific slate outside of one game. TNT pulled Dwight Howard. Got some bad advice.
Yep.
Because it is Sixers, Bulls, and then we appreciate our partners at TNT. You can catch continuing coverage of the NCAA tournament on CBS Sports, Sports Network, as well as the tournament broadcast family of networks next month. So we love them.
Yep.
But whoever chose Sixers, Bulls.
They had to have thought that Derrick Rose was coming back at this point, and Andrew Bynum would be there and be good.
Yeah, but here's my thing. This is like a decision that was based off of market and star power with no consideration of the nuances of basketball. Because if you've watched Chicago, or if you've watched the Tom Thibodeau team over the last 3 years, or you've watched the Sixers over the last few years with Collins, then you know that these teams are an affront to offense.
Yes.
They grind it out. And that's great. And great defense is good. You can't put two teams like that together.
No, I disagree. If Derrick Rose is in the game, you absolutely can.
You think?
Even a recovering Derrick Rose. Like, most everybody thought he would be back by now. And if Derrick Rose is in the game and he gives you one play, it's worth it.
I guess it's Rose versus... I guess if you figure Bynum keeps them competitive despite how terrible their offense is.
Yeah.
Things are going bad in Philadelphia right now. I got to write about this today at some point after I get some
Ooh,
stuff
Doug
done.
Collins. He's not happy.
Well, and it's, you know, how can I put this?
It's classic Doug Collins.
Where
he's lost his team. Where everyone wants to, like, the first couple of years he's with the team, they're like, oh no, he's great, he's awesome, I can't believe you think things are going to go badly. And then things go badly, and he loses his team, and people are like, wow, didn't see this coming. It's like, really? Because it happens everywhere he goes.
And to me, it's the big thing about Scott Skiles with the next place that he goes.
Yeah.
Like, Scott Skiles has to learn the next – and he's gotten better. He lost the Bucks in less time than – or, in you know, it took him more time to lose the Bucks than it did in Chicago.
Yeah.
But he's still – and part of that was they lost him as much as he lost them.
Yeah.
But,
and I think Doug Collins is an excellent coach. I think he's pretty good.
Defensively, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
Defensively, like, his defense is – for him to pull out as good of a defense out of Philadelphia as they've had this year with the injuries
– yeah.
Is remarkable.
But he does wear on his players. Like, eventually, year three, year four, you start, you know, he loses them.
I have a big problem with this. Collins advocates for mid-range jump shots. Like, he's fighting for, like, the old-school way of doing things and rejecting some of the things that we've learned about basketball, which is, like, Carl's embraced it. Carl, this is old, but Carl's like, look, the most efficient places of basketball are at the rim and at the three-point range. And you don't need to have any sort of advanced stats to figure that out. That's pretty obvious. The corner three, at the rim, layups, dunks, and free throws.
Yep.
Like, that's how you maximize your chances for success. And Collins instead wants them shooting mid-range jump shots, and your offense dies that way. If you look at the teams that take a lot of mid-range jump shots, all of the league leaders in that category are almost all horrible. Boston is one of the rare exceptions because they honestly have guys that are just veteran guys that's what they do. Like, yeah. Garnett and Bass, that's what they can do. Garnett, Bass, and Pierce, they can hit those shots. But for the most part, if you're taking those shots, your offense is going to be terrible. So this game is going to be a disaster tonight.
Yes.
Bulls are favored by 7.
Yes, I will say coming into the like when they make the schedule. I think the slate looked awesome, but circumstances have brought about a bad night of basketball.
I think Sixers Bulls is a bad decision, but regardless, the later one, which we'll get to in a second, I can understand that. Bulls favored by 7. I like them to cover.
Yeah, the Sixers are in a bad place right now. It would be hard for me to 7's about the limit where I would push it, but it'd be hard for me to take them anything under 7.
Timberwolves and Lakers is a late game. Kirilenko's out, and there's no telling when he's going to be back. That's their best defender. You're talking Pekovic, J.J. Barea, Rubio, Cunningham.
Derek Williams played really well the last 6 games.
He needs to have a trade display game. This would be a great opportunity for him to be like, hey.
Hey, you guys.
Lakers are favored by 10 in this game.
Yeah, I'd probably take the Lakers.
And it's a 205.5 over-under. So they're not expecting the Wolves to be able to slow him down either.
No. Well, I mean, that sounds like a lot of points to me. Wolves can't.
It does sound like a lot of points to me, but I guess with the pace factor.
Yeah.
I mean, you're only talking, you know, 105-100.
Wolves don't get to 100 points a lot.
I guess they're figuring the defense is going to fall apart. Might take the under there. I would take the under.
I would take the Lakers and the under, personally. Just FYI, the Wolves have reached 100 about 12 games this year.
So I guess they're figuring that the Lakers are going to score
120.
115.
Yeah.
Which, without Kirilenko, is kind of the anchor of their defense. If you want a reason to watch this game, Dwight Howard versus Bekovic is the reason to watch this game.
Rubio on national TV.
Rubio versus Nash on national TV.
Rubio does tend to put on a bit of a show for national TV. Like, he recognizes the cameras are on him. He loves making plays for the fans. I think he'll have a couple of pretty sweet plays.
Who's Manuel Pease going to get into a fight with?
Greg Steensma.
Oh, good candidate.
Yeah. Great. Everyone is taking shots at Steensma lately. Matt Barnes did it. Jarrett Jack did it. Caron Butler did it. I mean, people are don't like Greg Steensma being tough.
And then the game of the night, which is not on national television, which we're writing about today for 4-point play, Clippers Pacers in Indiana. It's a pick 'em.
Could not be two more opposite styles of basketball.
Efficient offense, pretty good defense versus grinded out, beat you up defense and a sluggish offense.
Yep.
It's a 191 over under, which is low for the Clippers, but sounds about right for the Pacers.
Yeah, they just don't give up points at home.
It's tough. This one's tough, man. I love George Hill versus Chris Paul.
Yeah.
That's a really good matchup for George Hill's defense.
No Roy Hibbert, right?
No Roy Hibbert. He's suspended. Which means Yon Mahimi, Mahimi beat's going to start.
I don't know what that noise was.
So Mahimi versus DeAndre Jordan, which is entertaining. Blake Griffin versus David West is what I'm focusing on for 4-point play.
That's going to be fun. That's
kind of an interesting matchup.
The Pacers on the season are 95.3 defensive rating. At home, 93.5.
God, that's good.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really good.
Somebody was saying, they're like, who's going to guard Paul George? And I was like, that's good. You might want to put Grant Hill on him.
Yeah, Grant. If you can get 15 to 18 minutes out of Grant Hill on Paul George, that's a really good matchup.
And then, oh man, oh god, we're gonna, oh, they just, you know, they got these suspensions. Man, we're gonna have Matt Barnes versus Tyler Hansbrough tonight.
That's gonna be the fight of the night.
Yeah. Get your popcorn. That's gonna be fun.
Yeah, that's gonna be the fight of the night.
Because that's two guys that just do not care.
Back to back fights for Indiana. They might be suspended for this weekend.
DJ Augustine versus Eric Bledsoe in a battle of guys who you were underwhelmed by.
I like Eric Bledsoe. DJ Augustine's terrible.
Granger's also got an X factor in this game.
Is he playing?
I think he might be.
That would be fun. Good to see him back.
Yeah, he's been playing for a little bit.
So. Yeah. I just didn't know if he would be playing this often. I just figure he'll sit out games.
He might be, but, you know, we'll have to see. It's going to be a fun one, though. That one I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, I think I'll go Clippers because of no Roy Hibbert.
Okay, I'll go Pacers because I trust in the defense. And I also, because I'm watching this David West video, he's so good.
He's absurd.
I was talking about this on Twitter, people do not understand how good he is.
Yeah. What was funny about that fight the other night, that shoving match the other night, wasn't a fight, was that's one of the few guys, one, I wouldn't ever mess with if I'm an NBA player. Like, David West is not a guy you make mad.
Yeah.
Like, if you get in a scrap with him, you're probably going to the hospital. And two, yeah,
you don't want to mess with him.
No.
This one could get ugly tonight, so it definitely bears watching.
And two, he's also a guy I wouldn't want to make mad because he seems to play better when he's like got like a motivation.
Right.
And especially in the fourth quarter, like, that guy can just be nails.
Yeah, he really can be.
Yeah.
Fourth quarter. Assassin's Creed, David West, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, good stuff. I enjoyed talking about basketball. It was a fun night last night. It's been.
I as well enjoyed talking about basketball.
We should do this again sometime.
Yeah. Hey, let's do it tomorrow.
Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, man.
Thanks.